responses providing intermittent light. During services, this floor echoed with the crooning of the Mangsa choir and the Eminence's sermons, an intentional design to let any present here listen, meditate, and repent.
"You shouldn't be,"
a Mangsi started to say, coming out of a supply room on their left. His eyes widened when he recognized Ben.
"My prince, what can I do for you?"
"I pardoned a Mecht raider," he said. "I need to speak to him."
Behind Ben, Yakis straightened, but he stayed silent. The Mangsi's shoulders hardened.
"Yes, follow me."
He started off. Most cells they passed were occupied, and Ben recognized the aristocrats from the gathering yesterday. They either slept on cots or knelt before the carving that decorated the back of each cell, the church's cupped hands. The Mangsi made another turn and stopped before a cell near the end of the hall. The hangover Ben had had and the chaos of that Inquisitor patrol blurred his memories of the raider. All he remembered was the sun high in the sky and in the man's blonde hair. When Ben looked inside the cell, he let out an audible groan. The Mecht wore the same clothing Ben had caught him in, stained now. He stooped on his knees, his arms tied at the base of his spine to chains that snaked up the walls, his head drooped, hair matted. He grunted as though it took physical effort to hold himself upright.
"The prince wishes to have a word with you,"
the Mangsi informed the raider as he unlocked the cell.
"The pious god watches your every move."
The Mecht snorted, but the noise was hard to catch. He lifted his head, and Ben saw why. Mangsi's had fastened an iron mask over his mouth and nose. Ben had seen raiders confined, the more reactive ones restrained, but this one wasn't even allowed to breathe freely. It was Ben's fault the man was chained like this. His fault that the Mecht had been transformed from a sun to a flickering candle flame.
"He's safe,"
the Mangsi told Ben.
"This is to remind him of the restraint he must show as a child of the pious god."
"Leave us,"
Ben rasped. The Mangsi bowed and left. Without him, it was quiet, and Yakis stayed so silent that Ben looked at him to make sure he was still there. Yakis's attention was on a cell across the way, where a man lay on a tattered pallet. His body shook, tremors that made his limbs twitch, but otherwise he appeared unconscious. Shaking sickness.
"Are you sure you wish to be down here?"
Yakis asked, his voice brittle.
"How will this help you make the tonic?"
In response, Ben entered the Mecht's cell. The man's eyes narrowed in either a glare or a squint. It was hard to tell.
"Can you speak?"
Ben asked.
"Have you recanted?"
The look he gave Ben was now definitely a glare. The fury in his bloodshot eyes was so strong, the blue depths darkened.
"I'll take that as a no,"
Ben said. He lowered himself to the floor, level with the Mecht. Pious god above, Ben had forgotten how big the man was, his size intimidating even while restrained. The Mecht jolted at Ben's movement, his shirt shifting across his chest. Light from the tapers in the hall caught briefly on his sternum, showing red welts that made Ben lean closer.
"What happened?"
Ben dared to grab the edge of the Mecht's shirt. Their close proximity made him flush with the heat that radiated out of the man's skin.
"Did the Mangsis do this? If they're..." "Your people cannot hurt me,"
the Mecht said.
"In the Mechtlands, we are taught to worship Vajorn, bear spirit, rampaging and brutal, eternally hungry. I do not fear your petty god of words and obedience."
Ben froze, his fingers pinching the Mecht's shirt. The Mecht's words and the scar on his chest were what stopped him. Four swirling lines branched out of a circle. It looked like a brand, but the lines were jagged and unsteady, as if someone had painted the wound on by hand.
It's an emblem,
Ben said. His eyes lifted to the Mechts.
A clan mark, I'd guess.
The Mecht didn't respond, but his words and attitude gave Ben hope.
There are things I want to know.
Ben released his shirt.
The Eye of the Sun is...
A deep chuckle resonated against the Mecht's mask. When he spoke, it was in a language Ben didn't understand, one of the dozens of tongues of the Mechtlans.
Excuse me?
Ben pressed.
I say, our Gridian prince is...
The Mecht paused, the corners of his eyes wrinkling.
Our Gridian prince is... like dumb, only worse. Only you do not know you are.
I'm not asking you to tell me your secrets,
Ben assured him.
I want...
What did he want? The Mecht shrugged his torn shirt up his shoulder, covering his mark as best he could. The temperature of the cell ramped higher, and sweat trickled down Ben's spine.
Your magic is permanent,
Ben whispered. The Mecht tipped his head in confusion. Ben risked a glance back. Yakis's focus was on the sick man across the hall. For a moment, they had privacy.
I don't care about Eye of the Sun itself,
Ben whispered.
What I care about is that it's permanent. There aren't any other plants with effects that last that long. How did you do it?
They do not give Eye of the Sun to those who will talk,
the Mecht countered. And Ben got the impression that his lips were sealed as unbreakably as his iron muzzle.
How many of your people have died in Argrid?
Ben asked. The Mecht looked away.
All because this country fears magic so much they'd rather kill those who use it than understand it. I can make them understand, but I need you to help me.
The Mecht didn't look at him. Ben tried another tactic.
It can't be any of the traditional methods. Not a paste, a tonic, not inhaled.
The Mecht didn't react. Ben's eyes fell to the parts of the mark he could see. It almost looked like a burn Ben had received at a feast as a child. Melted sugar had sat in a pot for people to dip fruit into, and when he'd gotten some, a strand of the molten liquid had squirmed across his arm. For days after, he'd had a nasty red mark on his skin, like the Mecht's scar.
A syrup?
Ben said aloud. Thicker than a tonic, more condensed. The Mecht looked up, his eyes unreadable. Rodrigo had dissolved helicopods in boiling water, and other plants were dissolved to make tonics. But Ben had never heard of a plant reduced beyond that stage. And he had seen an eye of the sunflower once, in a shipment long ago. It had no buds for nectar, no part of it that contained a naturally occurring syrup. Ben rocked forward, so close to the Mecht that if the muzzle was removed, the man would only need to sigh to singe Ben's face. But Ben reached forward, and before he realized what he'd done, he laid a finger on the Mecht's scar. The flames that had burned up Rodrigo and Paxben hadn't been this hot. This heat was frantic, and Ben launched to his feet, staring at his hand as if he expected it to be on fire. The Mecht looked up at him, eyes wide with fear.
They branded you with the liquid,
Ben guessed. But that wouldn't work with healing plants. He could reduce them to a thick liquid and heat them hot enough to scar, but he had helped study an eye of the sunflower. It let off its own natural heat. That was likely what made it brand the skin. Ben looked back. Yakis had his back to them, still watching the sick man. Hadn't he seen someone with shaking sickness before? Then Ben remembered. Yakis's sister and her children had died of it. The silence from Yakis was more potent suddenly. He was too stricken even to hum that song. Ben's limbs flooded with anxiety. They needed to leave. Ben dropped in front of the Mecht again.
Did they make you drink it? How did you ingest it? You had to have taken it. There has to be more.
If Ben could make healing plants permanent, like Eye of the Sun was permanent, he could show our Gridians that they didn't need to fear magic. that good could come of it. He could break his country's dependency on the church and Eleazar and... The Mecht hissed in his own language, an unmistakable curse. Ben reached behind the man's head. Yakis jolted into the cell.
My prince!
But Ben was already unhooking the muzzle. If the Mecht had ingested the concoction that had burned his chest, he'd have scars in his mouth, too. The muzzle fell. The Mecht's upper lip curled.
Dumb prince, he rumbled and blew out.
Ben jerked to the side, but no fire came, only a long string of smoke. He whirled back to see the Mecht coughing. The man leaned to the side, his chains keeping him from lying flat out, and he hung there with his arms bent behind his back, his whole body shuddering. Yakis grabbed Ben by the waist and hauled him up, but Ben planted his feet.
They aren't feeding him,
Ben stated.
With good reason, Yakis said. The devil's grip on him is too strong.
Ben shrugged Yakis off and grabbed the Mecht's chin. Those furious blue eyes found his anger intensified now that his whole face was free. Ben lifted the fingers of his free hand. The Mecht's jaw was warm in his palm, heat spreading into Ben's body and planting urgency in his gut. Neither of them moved. A spell of shock linked them. Ben, that the Mecht hadn't shoved him off yet, and the Mecht, maybe that Ben was being so gentle. Forcing himself out of the spell, Ben parted the Mecht's chapped lips. The Mecht jerked away. Yakis mistook the movement for attack and slammed into the raider, who bashed his head against the wall. He cried out, body wilting, but the chains kept him upright, unable to rest, unable to lie down. Ben had felt the rough flesh on the inside of the Mecht's mouth against his teeth. His lips were scarred.
Monksy!
Ben shouted. The Monksy appeared, hands clasped against his robes.
Give this man food and water,
Ben ordered.
Unchain him. We don't...
He almost said, we don't murder people here. But it was a lie. One he'd helped form, obeying the church without question, because what could he do to stop them? He'd been part of the problem for years. He'd been as much a murderer as Eleazar. The Mechts had created a syrup from Eye of the Sun. The exact method of preparation was a mystery, and who knew what they combined the flower with to achieve the desired state? The healing magic would likely be different anyway, another combination of plants. But the information was a start, and with it, Ben would free his country. Ben marched out of the Mecht's cell. Yakis followed, waiting until they'd taken the first two steps up the stairwell before he grabbed Ben's arm.
Don't you ever do something like that again, he barked. I'm used to you being reckless, but that was a new level of risk that I'm not willing to let you take.
Ben shoved back.
I'm willing to do what I have to. If you can't, I'll find a guard who...
He stopped, staring, because he never thought he'd say something like this. Yakis's face went cold.
Yes, my prince, he said. I will not question you again.
Yakis, no.
I'll be whoever you need me to be if it means keeping you safe.
Ben put his hand on Yakis's cheek.
I love you,
Ben told Yakis in the stairwell of Grace Neus Cathedral, with condemned souls below and righteous parishioners above.
When it breached propriety, a prince and his guard. When it went against the pillar of chastity, I loved you. That was always true.
Yakis linked his fingers around Ben's wrist.
What?
But Ben wanted this moment to stay pure when, one day, Yakis would realize that the rest of Argrid was right about him.
Prince Benyat is a heretic, they said. He is irredeemable.
Ben started up the stairs, climbing for the light. 17. Lou followed Vex into the Tunkian refuge. They saw tents of taut animal hide and small cottages of stone or weather-beaten wood, some temporary structures, some permanent. As they passed children rolling a ball between them, Lou asked,
"What do they do here exactly?"
It came as a whisper, weighed down by the dozens of other questions waiting on the cusp of this one.
"If I tell you, you can't get all council righteous on me again,"
Vex said. Lou hesitated, considering if she would, but he took her silence as agreement.
"Fatima helps anyone with Tunkian lineage,"
Vex said.
"New immigrants camp out until they can get set up with houses and jobs, and any Tunkians already living on Grace Lorraine can hide here if they're being threatened or need a place to stay during a rough time, which has been a lot lately."
He motioned to a family, a mother tending her child's scraped knee outside a tent.
"They're forced to join Kansu's syndicate then," Lou guessed.
"They become criminals." Vex's jaw spasmed.
"They aren't criminals, they're people."
"They join the syndicate, though. They steal plants from the council's rivers and sell them under Kansu's banner instead of Grace Lorraine's. They have another option. That is what I find so frustrating. They don't have to be criminals or—
"They're people, Lou."
Vex rounded on her.
"Sure, some join Kansu's syndicate as raiders, but most want a good, honest life, and that's what Fatima helps them get. Because as soon as they land here, the council writes them off. Or worse, targets them."
Lou shook her head. "Many Tunkians have become Grace Lorraine and aided in the country's progress. They help build a system that—"
"Yeah, the lucky ones. The ones who have connections or find someone willing to give a raider or an immigrant a chance. But there's no system set up to help people actually become Grace Lorraine. You know that, right? The council won the war and expected people to instantly get jobs and steady lives, and when people couldn't, they got blamed for their problems. Which is why there are so many raiders, and why they're all really pissed that the council took away their source of income and scream at them for not being productive members of society."
Lou willed an argument to form. There were jobs now, for people who sought them out. There were proper lives, for people who worked to get them. But for those who arrived on Grace Lorraine's shores, like that mecht immigrant ship she'd seen in the market days ago, with nothing but hope, and for those who had been in poverty under Argrid's rule, with no way to change their situations once the council had taken control, whole groups of Grace Lorraine's citizens were destined for failure. The council dismissed raiders and immigrants alike as creating their own problems. But if the council wanted their country to function and operate for everyone, they needed to accommodate everyone and start taking responsibility for everyone as well. Lou watched herself grab Vex's arm as if her mind had risen from her body.
"I'm sorry,"
she said, fast and aching, as though apologizing to him would mend these wounds.
"It should have worked for everyone. I'm sorry."
Vex's eyebrows rose.
"It's not your fault,"
he said, unsure why she apologized.
"It is.
Why did you bring me here if this place exists because of the council's shortcomings?" Lou asked.
Vex cut her a grin. He didn't respond until he stopped outside a shack on the eastern edge of the sanctuary. Smoke floated through a hole in the top, sending out the herbal tang of cooking plants.
"Are you saying I should do a worse job of helping you?"
Vex tried for amusement. Lou didn't encourage him.
"I want to understand this."
Vex's smile fell. He leaned toward her, his body pressing close. Lou jolted, but Vex grabbed the door behind her and drew it open, the smirk on his face saying he'd intended to unsettle her, just as she had done to him on the falls. It worked. Warmth rushed over Lou's body and her mind went blank, but Vex smiled wider.
"After you?"
He beckoned her on. Lou ducked inside with a glare. The shack could have fit on the deck of the Meander. Rugs of woven dyed leather covered the floor, while drying plant clusters hung from the ceiling,
filling the space with the earthy musk Lu had secluded herself in for years. She felt, for a brief moment, home. Lu knew magic. Everything else could be in chaos, but she would endure because she knew that speed-giving Incris negated that bundle of immobilizing Lazenade, and that Awasia countered that drooping fern bunch, and Kansu rose from the carpets.
We'll help, but you aren't needed here.
Fatima sat by a small fire in the center of the shack, stirring a pot over the flames. She didn't pay Lu or Vex any attention, letting Kansu play guard.
What do you mean you're going to help?
Vex asked.
All we need is Fatima.
My syndicate, my plants. I don't trust that whatever you're doing won't hurt my people in some way.
The way Kansu said my people made Lu's heart twist with the same discomfort that had been building for hours.
I can help.
Lu gestured to Fatima. I've studied every plant on this island.
You're using Budwig, yes?
I'm guessing you have beans scattered across the island and have the corresponding beans here.
I can listen through some of them.
Fatima gave her an incredulous look. She lifted a bean, but when Lu reached for it, she fed it to the pot in front of her. Lu leaned over it, noting the brew, a murky maroon color the same as the bean, with a biting spiced scent that burned her nose.
You're dissolving it?
Lu frowned and knelt on the floor.
I thought the beans of the Budwig plant were placed in the ears, allowing people to hear each other over great distances.
Kansu chuckled.
Did you memorize botanical wonders?
Instinctively, Lu reached to her side, where her satchel usually was, but she had left it and her book on the meander. Lu had experimented only with the higher concentrations of plants that worked in liquid form. To cook budwigs or use any plant in a different state. She sat up taller.
Clearly you have not read it, or you would know that you are wasting rare magic on a preparation that was never outlined in the book.
The original settlers of Grace Loray wrote that book more than 2 centuries ago, said Fatima. What makes you think they knew everything about magic? What makes you believe that you, a Grace Lorraine, too bothered by war and trying to control the world, would know the secrets of this island?
Lu drew back.
Excuse me?
Vex sat next to her.
Be nice, Fatima.
You're wrong, Kansu said. What she's trying to tell you is that you're wrong. No one in any syndicate knows more about magic than Fatima.
A rebuttal rose in Lu's throat, but she couldn't let it past her lips. She was wrong. Or had been, with so many of her assumptions about raiders and immigrants, and admitting that much made her queasy. She steadied on the floor, fingers splayed on the carpet. Was she wrong about botanical magic, too? She had made it her purpose after the war to learn as much as she could. It had been all she wanted, to find something that connected her in a pure way to this island. Something safe. Fatima looked at Lu through the billowing smoke.
We are helping you, because you are Tunkian, as much as you may have forgotten. Our gods have not forgotten you, Fatima said.
Lu's eyes widened. They had recognized her lineage.
And because one of our own has asked it.
I'm not doing this for Nayeli,
Kansu muttered.
There was a deeper tension in the way Kansu reacted, something different from the familial betrayal Fatima exuded.
The knowledge you gain here is yours to do with what you will, Fatima said. But if the council learns of this place from you, you will die.
She said it so straightforwardly that Lu had no choice but to bow.
I will use this honorably. You have my word.
Fatima nodded, whether in acceptance of Lu's promise or because she knew the Tunkians would be able to kill her otherwise, Lu couldn't guess.
Kansu,
Fatima said, and sat back on her heels. Kansu took the spoon from Fatima and ladled a scoop of the now syrupy budwig. She pinned Lou with a heavy stare. What's the name of the Argridian?
I can do this, Lou said. I know you have no love for Argrid, but you don't need to be involved beyond this. Vex will be the one to bring back Milo and prove that raiders didn't abduct him. Tell me what to—
Don't think we need you, Kansu barked. I'll get you what information you need, and you'll leave. This doesn't change anything between the Council and us. Now tell me who I'm looking for, or I'll throw you out no matter what Nayeli says.
Lou gave in. Milo Ibarra.
Where was he last seen?
New Diza, the castle.
Kansu nodded, took a deep breath, and let it out long and loud. Another. On a final inhale, she brought the spoon to her lips and gulped a mouthful of the dissolved budwick. Lou rocked toward her as Kansu moaned, the liquid no doubt searing her throat. But Fatima intervened, batting away Lou's attempts to help. The motion sent an aroma wafting off her. Coconut and spices and a distinct memory of Lou curled up on her mother's lap.
She's done this before, Fatima said. We have budwigs in many locations around Grace Loray. With these beans dissolved and concentrated, the effects of their counterbeans are enhanced. This will allow her to hear through all the budwig plants at once. It takes a great deal of concentration to focus through the sounds each budwig picks up, so if you don't mind.
Fatima jerked her head toward the door. Vex was already peeling himself off the rugs.
Thanks, Fatima, he said, taking Lou's arm. Let us know when she hears something.
Vex dragged Lou out of the shack and grinned.
You're welcome,
he declared, hands out as if he might bow.
I told you I'd help.
Kansu, she can hear through every budwig they've placed on the island?
Can she listen for news from New Diza? Was what Lou wanted to ask. She had managed not to let herself linger on the horrors her parents might be dealing with. The furious Argridians, who would be demanding justice for Milo and punishment for the escaped Devereaux Bell. Searching for Milo both through the Council and her parents' loyal spies, and dragging out treaty negotiations. Though it appeared that delaying the treaty finalization and Milo's bill of eliminating stream raiders was not preventing soldiers from taking steps against raiders already. Kari, at least, would be as overwhelmed by this sanctuary as Lou. She would feel the familiarity, the connection, the guilt. Lou became painfully aware of the heat in her eyes.
I didn't know about any of this, she murmured.
Vex shrugged.
Don't be too hard on yourself.
Oh, no, I quite deserve this guilt. What I can't figure out is why you feel none. Have you helped them? Why have you done nothing? If you knew how lacking the Council was in helping immigrants and raiders, why not rally to change things?
Vex gaped at her, his face dropping muscle by muscle into a resolute stare.
This isn't my fight, he stated. And I have tried, so don't act like I'm some monster. I'd do anything they asked of me. But all they've asked is that I keep this place and what they do here a secret so the Council doesn't mess it up.
Lou opened her mouth. For 5 years, her passionate belief in Grace Loray's Council had been her guiding light. But the Council was so much less effective than she had believed, and she was powerless to change it. One mention of this secret lair, and soldiers would swarm in to dismantle it, before or after the Council put measures in place to compensate for the help Fatima offered here. Lou knew the answer. Immigrants, hiding away here, their raiders arrest them. And the things Fatima did with the budwig beans. What other knowledge of plants did she have? How much would people pay for her secrets? What could be accomplished? What diseases could be cured? Lou all but dropped to her knees right there. Had the cure for shaking sickness been within Lou's grasp the whole time? If she had broken down plants, liquefied them even though it was never mentioned in Botanical Wonders of the Grace Loray colony, could she have saved Annalisa?
Could she have even saved Annalisa and Teo's mother, Bianca, 2 years ago? Lou had always believed the council's purpose was to spread equality on an island that had suffered too long under Argrid's cruelty. But who benefited from their justice? Not the people who used the Tunkian refuge, and not, she suspected, any other immigrant group. Not the raiders who, though criminals, did not deserve to be treated as subhuman. The system Lou had bled to put into place was not the system this island needed. "We aren't enough," was all Lou could think to say. Vex lifted one hand as if to cup her shoulder.
"Fatima and Kansu don't expect..."
She pushed around him, arms folded, and stalked off down one of the winding pathways. Lou was a daughter of the revolution. She'd done unspeakable things to help create a country built on fairness and loyalty, hard work and justice. But she had looked at the future through fogged lenses, expecting the benefits of a new country to be so obvious that she had dismissed anyone else's feelings. Who wouldn't want a fresh start? Who wouldn't want to help build something as grand and full of potential as the council? These raiders who abused her system were wrong, so why should the council heed them? But no. Lou was wrong. She had been wrong all along. She wandered until she found herself in a clearing, a bonfire keeping the shadows of night away from a circle of tents and shacks. Tunkians filled the area, and Lou noticed now the brands on several of their wrists. The R behind Argrid's crossed V. Etta helped Teo roast food in the fire, while Nyeli, seated in the shadow of a tent, sorted plants in her lap.
"Fatima show you the magic?" Nyeli fluttered her fingers as Lou knelt beside her.
Lou nodded. "Yes, the magic. And too many other things." She scrubbed a hand down her face, not yet strong enough to talk of it. She asked an easy question. "Is Kansu angry only because you disagree about the sanctuary? Something else happened to keep you out of her syndicate." Nyeli grinned, but didn't give anything away. A mystery as simple as the tortured past between Nyeli and Kansu was comforting. Lou tipped her head. "You love her still." Nyeli's eyes went wide, and a warm red blush tinted her cheeks, but she shook off her surprise with a laugh.
"You're too smart. I might not like that eventually."
"It makes sense now why she helped us," Lou continued. "It was for you."
"No,"
Nyeli countered too forcefully.
"It'd be more likely for you and Vex to end up in bed together. Cot, as it were. The Meander doesn't have beds. And they are very squeaky, so gods, if you do decide to roll around with him, do us all a favor and fornicate somewhere less..."
Lou blanched. "Do you say everything that comes into your mind?"
"A lot of people have told me I should think before speaking," Nyeli considered.
A look of abject horror crossed her face.
"Damn, I'd never get to say anything fun again."
"Lou!"
The panic in the voice yanked Lou to her feet. Vex sprinted into the clearing, his head whipping back and forth until he spotted her and dove her way. Behind him, up the path he'd come, Kansu stormed out.
"Raiders, to me!"
she bellowed, just as Vex reached Lou and said,
"She found Ibarra. It's bad, Lou."
More people and raiders hurried in from side roads, squeezing between shacks to gather around the bonfire at Kansu's command. The violent orange of the flames thrashed as Kansu lifted a fist into the air, punching her words.
"Too long have we lived in squalor, waiting for the council to make good on a promise they never intended to keep. Too long have we let them treat us like vermin in their sewers. Now we prepare to fight back."
Lou's blood felt as though it would burst out of her veins.
"What happened?"
she whirled on Vex.
"What?"
But Kansu stalked toward them.
The Council turned on us when it was only a hunch that raiders abducted the Argridian. You said so yourself. The moment they find out that raiders did abduct him, they'll declare all-out war against us.
Lou staggered back, lungs emptying of air. A hand was on her back. Vex?
Lou,
he said.
I'm sorry.
The Mecht Syndicate has him,
Kansu declared viciously.
Pilkvist's raiders abducted the Argridian general.
18. Everything rushed into Lou at once, her mind scrambling for sense amid the senseless. 3 days ago, she had freed the most notorious raider on Grace Luray from prison. She had defied her parents and no doubt brought turmoil to the council. She had dragged Teo into it as well, not even half a day after his sister's death. Before that, a memory tugged at her. Plants used in unusual methods, drooping fern in a pot of tea. She had been so certain Milo and Argrid had staged this. She had based every action on her gut feeling that drooping fern could not work in that preparation. But she had watched Fatima boil budwig to increase its potency, a plant Lou never would have fathomed preparing like that. Lou lifted trembling fingers to her forehead. She had been wrong in how she viewed immigrants and raiders. She had been wrong about the extent of Grace Luray's botanical magic and how it could be taken further, enhanced. Had she been wrong about Milo's abduction? A hand tightened on her shoulder, and she realized the only thing keeping her from collapsing was Vex's gentle, constant grip. He met her eyes with utter sympathy. She must have looked wretched to warrant such a reaction from him.
The Council will see this as an act of war,
Kansu shouted at the gathered crowd of Tunkians, raiders and families alike.
They were already planning to use our blood to pay for peace with Argrid. We've let them play God over us for too long. They wouldn't have even won the revolution if it weren't for the help of the raider syndicates. This island belongs to us!
Cheers sounded from every direction. Some of the fists thrown into the air showed raider brands. Some had that and the Tunkian tattoo. But those distinctions didn't matter as they cried for battle. They were Tunkian. They were Grace Lorraean. They were Argridian. Lou shook her head, desperation clawing inside her to stop this, stop the chance, stop the war.
You can't,
Lou implored. The fire heaved hot and bright, stoking her frenzy.
My mother is a senior on the council. She will hear your grievances. She was the one who brokered an alliance with the raiders during the revolution. She can make the council see reason.
They'll only care about Pilkvist breaking that treaty they were trying to sign,
Kansu shot back.
They don't see the syndicates as separate entities. They'll come after every raider, and I'll be damned if we don't strike first. We've let them make a mess of this island, ignoring our needs, trying to make Grace Luray into something it isn't. This island is an island of raiders. We've never needed a government. We control our own lives.
Lou wanted to protest, but she knew the truth. If the Mecht Raider Syndicate had abducted an Argridian diplomat, the Council would go to war to solidify their control of the island and enact justice for Milo. They had taken steps in that direction anyway, and without proof. Lou's plan to stop that had been to bring back evidence that Argrid had staged Milo's abduction. But raiders had abducted Milo. Grace Luray was tearing itself apart, and even if Argrid hadn't planned it, they could take advantage of this conflict by swooping in and retaking a weakened island. The world throbbed and shifted, and Lou couldn't steady herself long enough to think past her horror.
It's happening again.
Someone moved next to her. Nayeli.
You don't want to fight the council, Kansu,
she shouted.
What's your endgame? An island ruled by warring raider syndicates? That's the life you want?
We want freedom, Kansu shot back. We want to walk our streets without fear of arrest. We want opportunities and safety. Argrid sure as hell didn't give us that. The council hasn't either. The only way to change this island's fate for the better is if we guide it.
More chanting rose from the crowd. Lu's focus snapped from person to person, her heart in her throat. Teo stood beside her, looking up with round, scared eyes. A voice plowed through Lu's mind, and she stumbled a step toward Kansu.
You've done so well on missions, her father had said. But you need to stay safe if things get dangerous. This is war, Lulubeen. You must be ready.
She had managed to keep her rationale the first time she had had to kill someone, and the second. It had been self-defense, she had reasoned. Men who turned violent when they figured out that she was listening to them. But the third time, Tom had kissed her forehead before they left the safe house, heading to a part of the jungle deep in Argrid territory.
This one is different. I wouldn't ask if it wasn't necessary.
Can't Mama help you? Lu had pleaded. I don't want to do this.
Kari doesn't know about this enemy. It will be so helpful to her, to the war. This is why you're my Lulubeen, because you can keep a secret so well. It's as if you took a magic plant that sealed your lips. Now, just a quick trip. You won't see a thing, I promise. Lu?
Vex brushed her arm.
What?
War had destroyed any chance she might have had for a childhood. Everything else, Lu's worries and guilt and her shifting mindset, splintered around a penetrating desire not to let Teo live the kind of life that war had forced on her. Lu shoved Kansu. The Raiderhead stumbled back. A gasp ripped through the crowd, and chanting paused, everyone gaping at the girl who had dared assault the Tunkian Raiderhead. But Lu was beyond herself.
You will not go to war, she declared. Call off your attack. You will not start a war.
Kansu flew up and slammed her forearm into Lu's chest.
Don't you ever touch me.
Lu!
Teo's voice pitched with fear.
Stop! Please stop!
Reality cracked over her and Lu panted, gulping air that sliced her insides to pieces. Every face she saw showed a mix she'd seen too many times. Wariness, confusion, disgust.
Lu?
Vex put a hand on her shoulder.
Hey, look at me.
She shoved him away and ran from the clearing, hands over her temples. She didn't stop until she came to the rough stone wall of the port. There, she fell to her knees, the chirps of the jungle rising over the barrier. This journey had been a mistake. Freeing Vex had been not only insane, but unforgivable. She needed to get Teo back to Nudiza and pick up the fragments of everything she'd broken, and end this new turmoil as well. What had she expected? Only destruction followed when she gave in to the monster she used to be, the one who fought for causes and never questioned what she was helping to achieve. Leaves crunched as someone sat beside her.
Not now, Vex, Lu said. Let me...
It was a damn fool thing you did,
came Etta's voice.
But I can't say I haven't wanted to push Kansu around a few times myself.
Lu looked at her, squinting.
You weren't in the clearing.
She had been, though. Lu had seen Etta across the fire before... Before Kansu declared that the Mecht Syndicate had abducted Milo. Etta shrugged.
Wasn't sure how Kansu'd feel about Mechts after that news about Pilkvist, so I pulled back. She seems kind of grateful, though, don't she?
She looked pointedly at Lu.
But I don't think I'm the only one who left that clearing out of fear of what I am.
Wanna tell me what's going on? You've been at war with yourself since you set foot on our boat.
War. The word made it impossible for Lu to respond. Etta must have seen the agony on her face.
I killed my husband, she said, candid.
It shocked Lu out of her own pain.
What?
Etta nodded.
It was self-defense. He was a monster. He'd come after me and others one too many times, and I...
She shrugged.
In the Mechtlands, they teach us as kids to embrace that kind of brutality in ourselves. They call it the Vajorn,
spirit of the bear. But once you do something like that, it changes you. And I ran from it for years. I did everything I could to pretend I wasn't someone who would have been that vicious. But you know what? I was. I wish I could say I regretted it, or that there'd been another way. But I don't, and there wasn't. And it got to a point where I realized I couldn't live with some fantasy of goodness, not with blood on my hands. Point is, whatever you fear so much about yourself, it's part of you. You can either keep fighting or change your expectations, but whatever you decide, you gotta commit. This back and forth is what'll get people hurt. And it's my job to keep this crew safe, which means I won't tolerate people who might jeopardize that safety.
Etta looked at Lou with a conviction developed after years of painstaking construction.
Didn't you hear what Kansu said?
Lou's heart ached.
The council won't care about one syndicate or another. They'll attack all the raiders. And even if Argrid didn't plan for this, it'll destroy us all the same. We'll go back to being the worst versions of ourselves. I can't bullshit, Etta interrupted. Look around, girlie. War may be lapping at our shores, but it ain't here yet, is it?
And you know the difference between syndicates now. You got the ear of the council, so tell them until they listen, or until war does come. But don't you sit here and speculate about might and maybe. It's a waste of energy.
Etta stood.
It wasn't always defense, Lou whispered.
Etta paused, but Lou couldn't meet her eyes. She choked.
Have you
murdered someone? Have you fired a pistol into the darkness and heard a body drop? Have you fallen asleep to your father's lullabies so you didn't hear dying gurgles in your memory? Have you done terrible things, then realized they were pointless? Lou regretted saying anything. She barely knew this woman and didn't trust her captain. Yet Lou had opened a door. A crack she had never opened with anyone.
You forgive yourself for what you've done, Etta told her. You admit your mistakes. You learn from them. And you improve.
She stalked off, leaving Lou on the ground with advice she didn't know what to do with.
Forgive herself. A simple idea, one she had never deserved, not after the lives she'd ended. The men she'd killed without allowing them a chance to fight. All to build a government that understood the people on this island as little as Argrid had.
Lou looked up, watching shadows move against the buildings.
Forgiving herself might have been too big a task for this night, but there were other things she could fix. Teo, for one. Where to begin apologizing to him? But first, Etta was right. War had not yet come, and Kansu had to see reason. Her concerns were valid, but civil war must not tear Grace Luray apart. They wouldn't recover from another bloody conflict, and Argrid must not have an opportunity to dive in again. Lou would talk to Kansu and convince her of that. They could even meet with the Mect Raiders and discuss their concerns too, determine why they had taken Milo. Lou would listen to Kansu and Pilkvist and all the raiders on this island and anyone else who needed to be heard. She would insist on the same from the council. She would refuse to relent until they admitted that their priorities were not what Grace Luray needed, that raiders and immigrants deserved better than prejudices. Kari, at least, would listen and support her. She had to try. She had to fight for a peaceful resolution. Lou headed into the sanctuary. The clearing was empty by the time she reached it. The bonfire burned down to embers. Had everyone left to make good on Kansu's orders? Or had they retired for the night, leaving the task of war for morning hours? Lou roamed the pathways, looking for Vex or Nayeli or anyone who could direct her to Kansu. She ended up outside the shack where Fatima had dissolved the budwig beans, light flashing along the bottom of the door. Lou lifted her fist to knock when muffled whispers filtered out. Through one of the cracks between the shack's weather-beaten planks, Lou caught sight of Nayeli seated on the rug next to Vex. He said something in Thudi, and Nayeli responded.
Vex bent forward, elbows on his knees.
Is that what they wanted me to do?
He asked in the Grace Lorray dialect. Nayeli shrugged.
You think it was staged?
Vex stared at the dusty rug under him.
Hilkvist's smart enough to know the repercussions of taking Ibarra on a whim. War is the only outcome, whether it's started by Khansu or someone else. I always knew I couldn't be the only raider on this island in Argrid's pocket.
He shook his head, his voice warbling.
I got a bad feeling, Nay. A really bad feeling.
He kept talking, but Lu didn't hear. The blood pounded in her ears, a deafening rush. In Argrid's pocket. Vex was working with the Argridians.
I should be insulted. They've been using the mechs, too. Here I thought I was special.
Vex looked at Nayeli, trying for humor, but he fell flat. She was an unstoppable force of joy most of the time, but when she was serious, God, he knew anything that came out of her mouth was true. Nayeli put her hand on his knee. He hadn't realized he'd been bouncing it.
I'd say anything to get us to leave Port Mezitip, she said. But we need to go find your Argridian contacts and figure out what's going on before Khansu gets a bunch of Tunkians killed. It's time we stopped running from Argrid and made them answer for what they've done.
Vex smirked.
What? Even if it means you won't be, what did you say, neck deep in a pool of wine in a few months?
A tub of wine, she sighed. Despite what Khansu thinks, I'm not heartless. And
she paused, her eyes dropping from his.
You never wanted to hole up somewhere like I did. You wouldn't have been content to retreat and let chaos keep churning.
Vex had never asked himself what he wanted. He, Nayeli, and Edda had planned on retiring for months, but that was back when Vex thought Argrid had just been after him. The moment he'd suspected a bigger scheme, he'd let Lu's righteousness infect him like a plague. His shoulders went slack.
We should make each other's life decisions from now on. I'll put you back together with Khansu, and you can make me some kind of hero.
Nayeli yanked her hand off his knee.
Asshole!
You love me.
Outside the shack, the thud of a footfall made them both shut up. But when Vex stood and opened the door, the road was empty. Nayeli came up behind and gave him a shove.
Find Lu. You need to explain your real connections to this.
Vex groaned, long and loud and more than a little childish.
Yes, mother.
She slapped the back of his head. He relented, plunging into the night. Vex ran into Edda outside the lodging his crew used when they came here. She sat on the ground, watching nearby Tunkians take turns throwing knives, either a game or, after Kansu's announcement, practice for what was to come. Vex shivered.
Yeah, he needed to stop this.
He kicked Edda's boot.
You seen Lu?
She nodded at a tent across the way.
Saw her going to talk to Teo.
Vex ducked inside. It was dark when the tent flap closed behind him, so he held it open to let in light from the torches outside.
Lu?
He whispered.
You in here? I need to.
A gust of wind carried through the open flap. But where it should have fluffed the other walls, it hissed through a split in the back. Vex squinted. And started to panic.
Lu? Teo!
He moved the flap wider to let light into the whole tent. The slice in the rear of the fabric was tall enough for a body to slip through. And the bed in the far corner was mussed but empty. Vex burst through the cut. He was on a narrow path that ran between other buildings, one that wouldn't be visible from the main road. By the time Vex got back to Edda, Nayeli had joined her. He was shaking too much to be grateful that they both looked up at him. He knew they'd jump into action with only a word. But all he could think about was that footfall outside the shack when he'd been speaking with Nayeli. About Argrid. He grimaced.
I think they're gone.
19.
Raiders had abducted Milo, and Vex, all this time, was working with Argrit. Lou's terror slammed up against the pieces of information she didn't yet know. What was the extent of Vex's involvement? Did he follow Argrit out of loyalty, or was he a pawn? Had his arrest days ago been part of some scheme after all? But why? Lou could stay with him and his crew until she pieced together more. Vex didn't know she had heard him, and she would have stayed if not for the boy holding her hand. She had tolerated Teo here because she'd thought, in some questionable part of her mind, that she had control over this journey. Now she knew she had no control at all. She had to get Teo back to New Deeza. She would slip into the castle and speak to her parents before news of her return spread. Kari and Tom would be able to understand the convoluted events, the brewing tension with Kansu's syndicate, the definitive threat from Pilkvists. More, they would be able to forgive her for running off with Devereaux Bell. Lou had no right to feel betrayed. Vex and his crew had never promised to be anything but what they were. Raiders. Criminals. She wheezed on a sudden thought. If Vex was connected to Argrid, could Pilkvist be as well? Could Milo's abduction still have been staged? A syndicate working with Argrid to cripple Grace Luray meant threats would come at the council from two fronts, within and without. Kansu had rallied her syndicate to attack on the belief that the council's own manpower was weak. And it was. The revolutionaries had needed the support of raider syndicates to overthrow Argrid in the first place. So if both Argrid and raiders were to attack the council, everything would crumble. The threat was too big for her to handle. Prejudices, fears, collusion, hatred, war. A self-indulgent desperation sent a whimper scratching at Lou's throat. She wanted her parents. She needed to tell Kari and Tom everything she had learned, and they would take the information and work their wonders to smooth it away. Just like they had when she was a child. They would make it better. They always knew what to do. Lou stopped between two quiet shacks and knelt before Teo, rubbing her thumbs over his wrists. I'm sorry I scared you earlier. I should not have behaved like that. He smiled in the twilight. You're sad. People do lots of things when they're sad. Lou put her hand on his cheek. She didn't deserve his smile. We have to... Oh, he'd hate leaving Vex and his crew. And Lou couldn't tell him the truth of it. We have to play a game now. We have to get to the Rapid Meander without anyone catching us. Can you do that? Teo lit up. Oh, yes! He grabbed her hand and shot forward, yanking her arm so hard her shoulder popped. Lou pushed to catch up, correcting their path before he led them in the wrong direction. They raced between shacks, dodging the noise of the Tunkians, until they came to the edge of the sanctuary. The door Lou had arrived through stood in the wall of one of the looming tenement buildings, plain and nondescript. Would there be guards on the other side? Lou's hand went to her weapons holster. She yanked it down and led Teo to the door. It opened easily enough, revealing a staircase leading up. As soon as they entered the stairwell and shut the door behind them, darkness enveloped them. Teo's grip tightened. Lou?
Yes?
Thank you for bringing me, he sighed. Mama and Anna would have liked it. Being a raider, I mean.
No, Lou almost said, the word a kick in her throat. Bianca and Anna wouldn't have liked this. It's dangerous and too much like how we used to live. They didn't deserve it. Neither do you.
Lou squeezed Teo's hand, her heart fracturing.
I know, was all she managed.
She led Teo up the stairwell, one hand on the humidity-slick wall. All was silent apart from the creaking of the building at night and the occasional distant snore. They reached another door, this one leading to a hall. A few moments of wandering up and down shadowy door-lined hallways ended when Lou reached a pair of doors set in an alcove, cleaner air filtering through. Lou took a knob in her hand, but paused. She had been blind when they came here, and Kansu had disoriented her even further. How would she find the rapid meander? What if Vex had moved it? What if, while hauling Teo around Port Mezitib to find it, she stumbled into a situation more dangerous than lurking in shadowed tenement halls?
Lou?